Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Peach blossom in December, and islands that disappear under the surface of the sea. Scientists are predicting doomed scenarios for planet Earth as the seasons go wild, with far-reaching implications and consequences. But exactly, what is climate change? And what is the Catholic Church doing about it? And Father Jim Brand explains, we all have a share in the creativity of God. It's been quite a few years now that the concept of climate change has begun to sink in. Magazine and newspaper articles, radio and television programs every now and then sound the alarm. Climate change, they say, is one of the greatest environmental, social, and economic threats facing the planet. And something has to be done now, if not to reverse it, at least to stop the process. Although I feel I've always been ecologically aware, personally, it hit me very hard when my faithful old scooter was outlawed at the beginning of the year, forcing me to look around for a newer, greener vehicle to ride to work in. And when I recently had to put off a weekend on the ski slopes because there's no snow on the Apennines this winter, I decided time had really come to find out more about it. What exactly is climate change? What's happening to the Earth? And what can I do about it? I know where to look for answers. The Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace, just down the road from Vatican Radio, has ecology as part of its mandate. Who better to speak to than one of the Pope's men whose very job is to make sure we look after creation?
I'm Monsignor Jim Reinert, and I'm an official for the Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace.
Isn't ecology, I said to him, one of the fundamental teachings of the Church?
It comes from the very basis of the social teaching and the social doctrine of the Church. We find that foundation in Genesis itself, in the creation of man, the creation of the world, and how God shared that mission of creation with the first humans, with our ancestors, with Adam and Eve, and gave us the command of stewardship to live in the world, to care for it, to share in its abundance, to cultivate it, and to have dominion. And that's important. We have dominion over the earth, but not domination. That's a very important aspect, especially for our office and what we do, in our understanding of this relationship that we have between God and man, between God and the created world, and between man and the nature around him, our created world.
What is the difference between dominion and domination?
Well, it's that understanding of that we see in Genesis, where God gave human beings dominion, cultivate the earth, protect it, share in its abundance. That would be our understanding of dominion. Domination, on the other hand, would be a selfish use of the world's resources, taking more than the earth can produce or to sustain, to force ourselves on the created world. We would see those as domination, and that's not what God intended in our view.
Although it sounds as though that's more and more what man is doing at the moment.
Unfortunately, over the ages, it seems that in many cases, I see the news reports here lately of the danger of no more fish in the oceans in 50 years. That's a sign of domination, of taking more than the oceans can sustain. And so much of that is wasted, so much of that is not necessary. On the other hand, if we use the resources of the earth in a sustainable manner, taking what we need and only what we need, and allowing the earth to continue to, not just to heal itself, but to continue to sustain itself.
With respect for the earth and also for the other peoples on the earth.
And that's again, an important issue. Once we get past that idea of Genesis and what we saw in the scriptures, then the social doctrine of the church speaks of, and this is what we base ourselves on in this office, is the relationship between one another, between human beings, and the whole understanding of the development of people, making lives better for people, people being allowed to make their own lives better. This idea of solidarity that Pope John Paul II spoke of so often, and Pope Benedict has now picked up on that understanding and continues that, speaking of that relationship that we have with one another, that we are partners in this idea of sustainable development in the world.
Yes, Pope John Paul II really was a champion and a pioneer for sustainable development as far back as 20 years ago. That's what Bishop Christopher Toohey told me from his diocese in New South Wales, Australia, where he too, on the other side of the world, is involved in protecting the earth and its inhabitants. As well as being chairman for the Australian Bishops' Commission for Justice and Service, Bishop Chris, as he's lovingly known, chairs an ecological agency called EarthCare Australia.
It is a commission, or part of a commission, set up by the Bishops of Australia to look at the whole issue of the ecology and to respond to Pope John Paul II's call to the ecological conversion. So we felt that we needed to take some form of leadership within our own country regarding issues surrounding our environment, which hinges partly anyway on social justice, partly on our ethic of how we function as a society, and in our use of the goods of the earth. So it's a fairly broad mandate, which also includes education and some advocacy for the environment. It has always been part of our policy at Catholic Earth Care to listen to what I refer to as good science. That is science that's not politically aligned, as best as we can know, and not aligned with interest groups, as best as we can know. In other words, science that tells us the truth about the earth and the climate, you know, that we're living in at this particular point in time. And the advice that we were getting as far back as 2003-04 was that to some extent the earth is in trouble. It was advice that John Paul II had heard, and he used some very strong language to describe the future of the earth unless we take some very strong action. He even spoke about humanity being on the edge of an abyss.
And in fact, Monsignor Jim Raynett pointed out, just as Pope John Paul II was definitely a pioneer in this field, Pope Benedict XVI has picked up his legacy with some strong words about the importance of protecting and preserving the environment.
This is the second time that the Holy Father, in his World Day of Peace message last year and also this year for 2007, has spoken of that need. He didn't speak of creation and environment specifically last year, but he did speak of that relationship that we have with the world, with the earth, with the created universe. Also with this idea of energy, the church has in a way focused its attention in the last few years on the energy needs and the importance of energy and how, again, that can be made sustainable for all people. The idea that so many people, 1.5 billion people in the world, are without electricity, that we know that the use of carbon fuels is not sustainable and not sustainable for the environment, for the earth. And so these issues are being addressed, looked upon, focused, but we are paying more attention to them in these last few years. But we can go all the way back to 1990 and Pope John Paul's message of the World Day of Peace then, where he addressed the entire message on the protection of the environment and the created universe and how we must work. And it was there that I think possibly for the first time that the Holy Father used the term greenhouse gases. And so the church has been looking at these things for almost 20 years and continues to build upon its understanding in the relationship of sustainability.
Now, you are the instrument the church uses to do this work, right? What does your office do? How do you go about implementing your mission?
We and other within the Secretariat of State and other bodies within the church, the nuncio in Nairobi is the representative to the United Nations Environmental Program offices there. And so we try to coordinate. We try to gather as much information as we can so that we can share that information, the best practices, whatever might be, with those who are trying to develop programs or trying to address the problem, trying to mediate the impact of global climate change that they see in the local community. We have the most wonderful network with the church, the local communities, and so we can see and we can communicate with the church throughout the entire world and see maybe someone has a program that's working in one part of the world that can be shared with another. That's one of our tasks, is to be a clearinghouse for that information. We attend meetings. We participate in international conferences and local conferences. Again, it's an information gathering, but we also lend our voice and our support to the various programs that we see.
And Bishop Tui's EarthCare is one of those organizations that are part of this network. Surfing its website, I discovered that in 2005, it organized an important conference on climate change, the exact topic I set out to investigate. What is climate change? I asked Bishop Chris.
Well, fundamentally, it's a little bit tricky, but we know that the Earth goes through cycles associated with climate change. We know that, and it's fairly well documented with ice core samples and so on. But our knowledge is sketchy. But even amongst that sketchy knowledge of the Earth's climate change over time, we've got a pretty good idea that those changes normally take place over periods of somewhere between 10 and 20,000 years. Now, the advice that we're getting, and I have to stress that it's not an exact science, but the advice that we're getting is that the changes that we're experiencing now are rapid. And so people are making a connection between the rapid changes in the climate, on the one hand, and the fact that we have produced so much greenhouse gas since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, on the other. And people who are doing the research are starting to fairly strongly form a view that there is a correlation between the two things, the rapid climate change and the amount of carbon dioxide that we are putting into the atmosphere.
So what is forecast for the near future if things carry on as they are?
Well, it's a bit of a mixed bag. In our own country of Australia, some parts will actually become drier and some parts will become wetter. Some parts of the earth will become colder and some parts warmer. What we have to understand is that the weather patterns are a complex thing, and they're driven on the earth basically by the absorption of energy from the sun, which is stored in the Earth's atmosphere, in the lithosphere, and in the biosphere, and in the Earth's oceans. Now, if the interaction between these things is complex and subtle and not completely understood. What we do know, though, is that the upper atmosphere is warming up, and that's what drives our weather systems. And we're being told that unless we reduce the amount of energy-storing molecules being sent into the upper atmosphere, then our weather systems will continue to change dramatically. We will see warming of the ice caps. We already know that glaciers are melting. We already know that ice is not forming on the tops of mountains where it used to, and we know that those ice caps and the ice on mountains is really important for big river systems in the world, including those which supply water to China and India. What we don't know is how these things will react to a warming atmosphere over a long period of time.
What we can be pretty sure of, says Bishop Chris, is that if we don't do anything about it, forecasts are full of doom.
It is possible that the sea levels will rise, that there'll be people in developing countries who will be unable to grow their rice. There'll be people in developing countries who will lack fresh water. There will be, consequently, a certain degree of pressure on other countries of the world to accept environmental refugees, and so on. I mean, I'm not a scientist, I listen though to the warnings of what credible science is saying to us, and I do believe that the governments of Western Europe, of Great Britain, of my own country in Australia, and I think even the United States now, are starting to accept the fact that there is very strong scientific opinion that this scenario is entirely possible.
But notwithstanding this catastrophic scenario, Bishop Chris Toohey remains optimistic.
I think the plus side is that if we can reduce energy-absorbing materials being put into the atmosphere by around about 70% by 2050, I'm being told that we can avoid the worst of this.
We can save the world in a way.
Well, in a way, yes. If you, I hope that that's not being too hyperbolic or overly dramatic. But as I want to stress that I'm not a scientist, but on the other hand, I'm not a fool either, and I need to listen to what credible people are telling me. I often use the analogy of my car, because I'm not a mechanic either, but if I was to take my car to a mechanic for its service, and he said to me after the service, "Well, Bishop Chris, you know, your car is basically all right except for the brakes."
"I'll let him."
"Now," he said, "you know, if we don't do something, these brakes will fail." And I said to him, "Well, how long have they got?" And he said, "Well, it's possible that you could drive out of the driveway, put your foot on the brake and nothing will happen, but they may go for another 5,000 kilometres. I know in my mind that I would say, "Well, you better fix them," rather than say to him, "Well, let's see how they go, and if nothing has happened in 5,000 kilometres, we'll worry about it then."
Well, I'm sure nobody really thinks this is a matter that can wait. I, for a start, have bought myself a scooter with a much reduced impact on the atmosphere, and try to be really careful in day-to-day energy consumption. Bishop Toohey is most encouraging.
We have to look very carefully at our society. I know that technology makes very good and useful and enjoyable products available to us, but we do need to look at our level of consumption, our level of waste, the fact that there is an enormous amount of energy reaches the earth each day from the sun, but we really don't take the trouble to harness it very much. And we need to look at all the alternatives surrounding wind energy, energy that we can get from the ocean's waves. All sorts of things are open to us. But if we stick our head in the sand and say, "Well, look, you know, this is, the scientists can't make up their mind, it's just all very confusing, I don't want to take any part in this," I think that we are saying to our Creator, "Well, we're really not interested in the planet that you gave us on trust." So I don't believe, in my religious sense, that we can take that line.
One thought I shared with both Monsignor Reynert and Bishop Toohey somewhat scandalised them both. I told them of the consideration a young couple of friends of mine were making the other day as we watched yet another doom and gloom television programme on climate change, and of their preoccupation as regards the possibility of putting a child into such an insecure world scenario.
Well, certainly there's hope. We can't say that this is the last generation or we are the last people that will live in the world. We can't say that. I mean, that would be beyond fatalistic. At the same time, we can see that people are concerned, and that's very good that people are concerned. The concern that we have in our office is that how to address those concerns and how to aim that the technology, the knowledge, all of these things at addressing the root of the problem, and to find out, is there something that can be done? And then we have to move toward doing it. To find out at the same time, maybe this is a natural cycle of the earth, that something that we just have to experience and work through. These are things that we have to address and try to come to an answer.
I do believe that we need to be also people of hope, and I think this is where our religious sense comes in. And I try to remind people of that we have been given the gift of life. I didn't ask to be born myself. The universe did not ask to come into existence. There is such a being as the creator of the universe, and our faith as Christians, is that the creator of the universe actually walked on this earth. That's a staggering thing to believe. So we have immense power at our disposal. And I think the fundamental message of the feast that we've just celebrated at Christmas is that there is hope. And even from a scientific point of view, taking away any religious sense at all, just looking at the raw facts of the science, that I am being told that if we can reduce greenhouse gas emissions, that is, gases which actually store energy in the upper atmosphere, if we can reduce them by 70% by the year 2050, and I am told that this is entirely doable, this is not fairy tale stuff, you know, or a figure pulled out of the sky, this is doable, then we can avoid the worst of what may befall us. So I think we need to be people of hope, we need to have a religious sense, and we need to have a sense of our vocation, both for life itself and for the fact that this planet doesn't belong to us. It is given to us on trust for our use and our enjoyment and to be handed on to those who will succeed us. I think all of those things have to come together.
So Monsignor Reynert and Bishop Tuhi both said to me, carry on doing your part in raising awareness and above all, tell your friends to have a baby. The world is ours only until we pass it on to the next generations. And meanwhile, it's up to each and every one of us to take action.
Yes, and then people will say, well, you know, I'm only an individual, what can I do? And it's a good question, actually. I think there's a lot of things that we need to do. I've just hinted at some of them. One of them is that we need to get our religious sense right. We need to ask ourselves, why am I here? It's the fundamental question of human life, isn't it, really? You know, why am I here? What's it all about? The fact is that I did not ask to be born. And so I must ask the creator of the universe, then why was I given the gift of life? In our own faith, it is to know, to love, and to serve God in this life and to enjoy him in the next. And so I have got to take a very serious look at my life and say, you know, what am I consuming, especially in terms of energy? Do I really need to have all the lights on in the house? Do I really need to drive a car when I can walk a kilometre? And what kind of vehicle do I really need to own? How many products do I really need to buy? Because all of the products that I buy require energy to produce them. Now, you could say, well, you know, I'm only one person. But my God, there's not much point us waiting for everybody else in the world to take some kind of proactive stance towards our life. We've got to accept responsibility for our own, haven't we? And I don't think it's beyond reason to say that if we took a very careful look at the level of consumption that we have, and remembering that everything that we buy and consume required energy to produce it, I think if we look at it carefully and take a conscientious view of this, I think there's a plus side too, that it would actually help us in our own life, as well as helping the planet.
And now for a complete change of atmosphere, and one of my favourite moments. Father Jim Brand, spiritual director of the Pontifical Beda College in Rome, explains that we all have a share in the creativity of God, and tells us that we must allow everyone else to enjoy it too.
I remember as a child being told that to be a creator means you create something out of nothing. You can't do that, God does. And so really the reaction was, well, God and I haven't anything much in common, because I'm not God, I can't create things out of nothing. But then I realised, it's very superficial. We have a share in God's creativity. And the human person is extraordinarily creative. God planted a garden in the east and there he put us to care for it. The world could be seen as God's garden. Though sadly, we sometimes leave our sardine tins all over the shop, make the rivers dirty, raid Mother Earth before others have even heard there's a larder of oils and fuels. We pollute the air. I mean, God was green before the human race ever got round to feeling green. And later on, when I talk about the 10 summers I've worked with the Lakota Indians in South Dakota, we'll see how they fulfilled God's commandment about caring for their earth, because it is a common wealth. Think of the music, the art, the sciences, where the human genius has been creative. There's one thing I just can't understand. I've tried to understand it. I cannot understand vandalism. To me, vandalism is a real crime against creation. You know, the genius of those who've put up telephone boxes for people to communicate with each other and feel close, and people come in and destroy them. They must be extraordinarily bored when people destroy relationships. I've always enjoyed music and playing the piano, candle making, wine making, gardening, using my hands creatively. Could never paint. At school we had an artist who came in to give us a lesson once a week. And as a child I always had a bad idea of artists. I always imagined they had boiled egg on their front and smelt rather and never washed and had long hair. And then later in life I came to appreciate the French Impressionists. I've been a number of times to that Musée d'Orsay in Paris. The sheer wonder of the artist, whether it's a painter or Rodin, the sculptor, or the genius of the way they built the pyramids. Living in Rome, I'm surrounded by such creativity. Modern-day Italians are geniuses at design and floodlighting. Now, some people are very clever with their head, some very clever with their heart, some very clever, like footballers, with their feet. Absolutely amazed at the artistry and the discipline and the training. And some people major in their relationships. We have a share in God's creativity. And I would have thought the greatest creativity there ever was is to be involved in a relationship, because that is what makes us like the Father and the Son. And their relationship we call the Holy Spirit. Some relationships mightn't be holy. We might be sharing with an evil spirit that doesn't help us to grow and flourish. But anyone who's involved in relationships has gone beyond degrees and markings and examiners. It's the most creative thing in the world to be able to love and to be loved. The creativity may end up in new life of a third person, or it may end up in new life for everyone who surrounds us. All benefit from this friendship, this love, provided we're not selfish, clandestine. So if we have a share in this creativity of God, in our loves and in our friendships, let's allow everyone else to enjoy it. Because it isn't just for us that this gift is given. This creative gift is for the whole world to appreciate and receive its benefits. Amen.
Laudetur Jesus Christus.